Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
This is the Midday 1-8 served up by Wendy's on 104.5 The Zone.
Colts will have to snap it one more time, and then that will do it. Impressive performance by their offense. Frank Reich, first-year head coach, is going to lead them from a 1-5 start to the playoffs. Only the third team in NFL history to do that. The 2015 Chiefs started 1-5 and went to the playoffs, and the 1970 Cincinnati Bengals did it. And now the 2018 Indianapolis Colts, who come to Nashville and defeat the Titans 33-17.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. The season over for the Titans. The Colts to the postseason. They'll take on Houston this Saturday at 3:35 Central. The first playoff game of the weekend, wild card weekend across the NFL. With Paul Kuharsky, I'm Jonathan Hutton. JT is in today for David Reed. Chad Withrow back with us. He gets back from Nebraska on Wednesday. And in studio with us today because of the New Year holiday tomorrow, Blake Bedingfield, Titan scout for 19 seasons. He now joins us, and you can read his work at paulkuharsky.com. Blake, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Great to have you.
Thanks for coming in. You would think in this town that Marcus Mariota is on a most wanted poster and has committed criminal activity. Your thoughts on him not playing last night when we don't really know the medical stuff behind it?
Marcus Mariota is a tough quarterback, tough person, tough player. He is not going to sit out unless he has to. I don't know the extent of the injury. You read the reports on the internet. I'm sure they'll get some clarification today or in the following days and find out what he's really dealing with. But Marcus is a tough player. He's not going to ask out of a game if there's a chance to play. Now, would you want him to play in this game? Yes. I mean, you've seen it with the Steve McNairs, and you've seen it with other quarterbacks, but we're talking about a different injury. If you're talking about a neck injury that causes pain in the shoulder, this is something that he's dealing with all year. This is something that has affected his throwing with the numbness in his hands. You know, this is something that it's unlike any other position. If you have a shoulder, neck, hand injury, and you're a corner or a safety or maybe another position, you can deal with that. But if you are a quarterback and your livelihood, it means you throw the ball, then you have to have the feeling in that hand and you have to have the ability to know what your shoulder is going to react to on 30-plus passes a game.
3 out of 4 final week games that he's not been available for. I know there's a lot of bad luck, a lot of bad timing. But ultimately, you need your guy available for the last game of the season, which is often going to be the one that determines if you've got postseason or not postseason. So how do you approach that as you're deciding things about the guy?
You know, I think you have to look at the extent of the injuries. Is it going to be a consistent problem? It has been so far. He's missed games every year. We've been in this town for a long time now, over 20 years, and we've had quarterbacks that have missed. Whether it's Steve McNair in 99, I believe he missed 5 games that year. And yeah. There was a good quarterback in Neil O'Donnell that backed him up and was able to win some games during that season when you had a really good team. Unfortunately, you know, Blaine Gabbert is not Neil O'Donnell. And when you really didn't have that opportunity in this game with Blaine Gabbert to win the game on him. Now, but you start to look around and what could have helped Blaine Gabbert? Well, the offensive line. But they had a really good game. They opened up running lanes for Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry had a very good game on 14 carries, almost 100 yards. He had a long of 33 on one run. You know, Derrick did his job. The offensive line kept the pressure off of Gabbert. The problem is the Titans lack the personnel to make plays to help your quarterback. And whether that's Marcus Mariota or Blaine Gabbert, they don't have it. Name the last time a receiver has caught a screen pass and taken it 60 yards. Or name a time where you caught a 5-yard slant and they took it 40 yards for a touchdown. That isn't happening with this offense. You look at the Chiefs and you look at the Chargers, you look at some of these other teams, and they have players that make plays for their quarterback. The Titans do not have that player, whether that should have been Deion Lewis or should have been Corey Davis. There's a lot of should have beens, but there hasn't been a lot of production from those other personnel. When your offensive line, like last night, played a good game and your running back played a good game, there's only a handful of others that didn't on offense, and there was a reason why they weren't successful. But, you know, you would love to have Marcus out there because Marcus adds a threat when he's on offense. He adds a threat with his legs, and he adds a threat with his arm. He's a very accurate quarterback, and he's a competitor. In competitive games, he's very good. He just was injured in this.
Paul, give the latest report that you threw out at 10 a.m. this morning on Mariota and the independent doctor that he saw, and also the foot injury.
A preeminent spine specialist advised him not to play. And my understanding is that the torn plantar fascia
played a
limiting
factor
him,
last night.
Limiting him in a way that he you know, wasn't feeling like he could get out of trouble. You know, so it's contributing to the idea that he could suffer the hit that gave him the damage because he couldn't get out of places.
The foot issue is a very painful one. I've had it, and I don't play professional sports, and it's even hard getting out of bed in the morning for someone like myself. But if you're playing a game, it's really tough. I think J.J. Watt had that a few years ago, and he struggled with it. You know, those are injuries that are very tough unless it tears all the way through and then starts to re-heal itself.
It's better if you tear it all the way through.
That's what I've been told. It hurts less if it's torn all the way through.
It's strange. It's counterintuitive.
It regenerates itself, and then it's better. But it is a painful injury. But, you know, the real issue is you're talking about the spine, and you're talking about an expert that deals with the spine, whether that's started from the neck issue that causes the numbness. I mean, when you're dealing with something that significant, do you want to take that chance? You know, it's if you're going to a doctor, you need to listen to the experts. You know, I'm sure the trainers advised him as well as they could, but you have to go to an expert on something like that. And, you know, Marcus had to do what's not only best for him, but also best for the team. The best for the team is to let someone else start the game and flow within it instead of having maybe a Gabbert come in halfway through the first quarter if Marcus couldn't finish.
You know, Paul wrote at paulkowarski.com that there's too much crazy talk about Marcus Mariota just specifically regarding yesterday and his availability for the game. What's frustrating, Blake, is this is yet another season where we are left to ask the question, is he right moving forward? We just don't know is the answer. And that's yet another year where we're going to be saying the exact same thing, where the track is on repeat. That's the frustrating part of this, is despite the new offense, he struggled through the injuries all season, starting with week one, injured in week one and misses week 17, and then everything in between. There were good moments and bad, and you're still left saying, okay, maybe he is, maybe he isn't.
You know, it is disappointing. I mean, but when you look at it, is the team a better team when Marcus is on the field? There is no question about
it. No doubt.
And if you look around the league and you look at probably 10 to 12 teams right now, would they like to have Marcus Mariota as their quarterback? Yes, they would, because they have their own issues. You're talking about maybe a third of the league that would take him hands down right now. If the Titans decide to cut him, put him on free agency, there would be a bidding war for Mariota. And without question. Because he has that ability to be in the upper echelon of quarterbacks when he's healthy and when he's playing. And he's proven that he can win ball games. This isn't a team that's built personnel-wise that just you can roll them out there and they're going to win every game. Quarterback has willed them to win in another number of games. He's also put players in a position to be successful, whether it's a Corey Davis or a Jonnu Smith, and make players around him better. That's what franchise quarterbacks do. Now, the last piece of it is he needs to stay healthy. He needs to be healthy for 16 weeks. He needs to be on the field, or the team needs to look at another option. But I'm not talking about another option as a starter. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to go find that? You're not going to find it in free agency. You're not going to find it on the trade route. The draft this year is depleted for quarterbacks. You're going to have to wait till 2019 or 2020 draft to find a legitimate prospect that can maybe compete with a Marcus Mariota.
Maybe not compete, but what's the best you can do Gabbert was better than Castle. Now you need to get better than Gabbert. Who can you get in that room next year that I don't know if he pushes Marcus a little bit, but gives you at least a viable alternative for when he's hurt?
You know,
draft, free agent, Flacco is going to be out there. Bridgewater is going to be out there. Foles is going to be out there. I don't know if you can lure one of those guys. Can you overpay one of those guys to come here and be in the room with him instead of an opportunity maybe with more somewhere else? How bad's the draft? How high a pick would you spend? What's the Blake Bedingfield strategy for insurance?
This year is a tough year to do that.
I don't want you to wait till next year. I'm telling you, I need somebody this year.
Then you're going to have to go out and try to convince, and we're talking about 10 teams that need a starting quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater's not going to want to be a backup again. He did that with the Jets, and the Jets traded him to the Saints, and now he's a backup with the Saints. He's going to want an opportunity to play. And with the Titans, that opportunity is not going to be here from day one. You know, he can go to another team and compete as a starting quarterback. So it's going to be hard to recruit someone like that. But
can I say, Teddy, I'll give you more money, and if you come here, if you outplay Marcus in camp, you could start.
Sure. Now you've created a competition. Now you've created a divide in the locker room. Now you've created a lot of issues that you don't have if Marcus goes in with the season. And who's to say Teddy's better? I don't think Teddy Bridgewater is better. And Teddy Bridgewater had a significant injury that's kept him out for multiple seasons. So, you know, you're dealing
with a whole new set of complications.
No question about it. And so, you know, they went out last year and tried to replace Matt Castle, who was at the end of his career, with a Blaine Gabbert, a younger backup quarterback that's played a number of snaps in the league. That's what you're getting as a backup quarterback. Unless you can draft one like the Patriots did a few years ago and Jimmy Garoppolo, they drafted Tom Brady's replacement and he ended up having starting ability, which they were able to trade and get some value for. So unless you can do that, which this draft is not built that way, this draft is not built to go take a third round quarterback and get that future starter. You're going to have to wait. So who is that? Can the Titans scouting staff identify a player that they think is a starter? You know, they drafted Luke Falk last year as a potential backup and guy that can come. And then now he's gone and he's now a Dolphin.
So they may be SOL. And then even if they have that quarterback, say that quarterback's a third rounder. So you spend that third rounder on that quarterback, or do you spend that third rounder on the interior offensive lineman who's going to upgrade Josh Klein or the wide receiver that's going to help open things up downfield, or the defensive tackle that gives you the size that we're talking about them lacking?
No question. I mean,
this team
is not in a position where they can waste draft choices anymore. Last year they had a limited number and they got value out of the three players that they were able to keep. Three players out of an entire draft class. They only had four picks. They cannot waste those draft choices. They only have six this year, and all six need to have some sort of impact, whether it's a Cruikshank impact or, you know, you have impact more of the Landry Evans style. But, you know, this is not a situation. You're going to have to draft, like you mentioned, a defensive tackle that's going to play those 15 to 20 snaps a game as a rundown run stuffer. Instead of paying $4 million a year for a Benny Logan or a Sylvester Williams, go out and draft that player. Go out and draft the player that can play the 15 snaps a game that position requires instead of wasting money. So, you know, they're not in a position to waste it on a quarterback unless the scouting staff, general manager, coaching staff value a quarterback as a starter that happens to fall to the third round. And then it's no longer a waste because you've seen how many games Blaine Gabbert's had to play this year. Does Blaine Gabbert's snap count equal what a defensive tackle that's going to play 15 a game has? That's the kind of value you're looking at in the draft. And that's possibility with as many snaps as Gabbert's had to play this year.
Blake, let's go to the phones. And let's start with Greg in Brentwood.
Let's take 8 consecutive calls on Marcus.
Well, Greg's going to talk playoffs first, and then we'll go rapid fire. What's up, Greg?
Ready for the rapid fire. Love the show.
Thank you.
Marcus is our quarterback, and quite frankly, if Marcus had the protection and the time that Andrew Luck had, I think we're a really, really tough team to beat with our defense. I was just curious, and I really want to hear what Paul has to say. You know, we found ourselves win and you're in. And I don't hear anybody talking. Nobody's spoken or said anything at all about kind of going back to going for 2 points against the Chargers, when it seemed like we had all the momentum, and how much that AFC lost, it seems like it caught us, cost us here at the end. I mean, the look, we took a, we went to sleep on the Bills and the Ravens. There's nothing to talk about with those games. We didn't show up. But to me, it seems like we had all the momentum and were dominated the second half of that game, and then made a decision that really has come back to bite us by not having that win at the end of the year. And I'm just curious what y'all's thoughts are.
Well, I said there are three plays, you know, and every team can do this. But the Titans had a particularly odd year for Vrabel in his first year. Three plays. First one's, I disagree with you about Buffalo. I mean, they didn't play well, but they were in it. Nick Williams catches that touchdown. They win the Buffalo game. Boom. But the thing is, one more win, they still would have been in a win and in. They would have had to beat the Colts yesterday, get in the playoffs, because they would have lost a tiebreaker. The second one, to me, was a two-point conversion. I was against them going for it, not because I didn't like the aggression, but because they had just gotten down to the goal line area there, and it took them a long time and a big effort to get in. They needed a fourth down play to get in, right? It took them forever to get in. So the idea that they were just going to get in again, to me, was overzealous. They drove the field fine, but then when they got down there, the idea of having four downs to get in as opposed to one play to get in was a lot better to me, and I thought if you went to overtime, you had three potential results, a win, a tie, or a loss, and two of those results were better than what they wound up with. And then one that I forgot about until somebody mentioned it to me, Derrick Henry on the phantom hold on Delanie Walker in Miami, which would have been a touchdown, which would have changed the way that game played out. Any one of those three things goes differently. Things could have turned out differently again, though. They would have needed to beat the Colts with any one of those wins because of the tiebreaker scenario.
Any other plays you think of, Blake, on the season that, Paul's throwing out?
You know, I think what you saw is a mixed bag. You know, you saw the Philadelphia Eagles game and they converted the fourth downs multiple times to put that game ahead. And that was a, you know, a lot of chances, a lot of risk, but they were able to come through. The Chargers game with Paul, I agree. You know, you're in a situation where you have worn that team down and you were starting to, instead of going for two in that situation, you go for one, play overtime. You know, that's hindsight, but, you know, they just laid an egg in a couple of games like the Buffalo Bills and the second Houston game and, you know, the Colts game both times, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are things that's going to happen to a team that's really a 500 type team. And that's what this team has been from the start. And that's kind of what they are. 9-7 is a little bit above 500, which they showed in a tough division, which ultimately proved when you have two teams in the playoffs from your division.
And a loss that doesn't get the credit, I think it deserves mentioning because we look at Buffalo as being a terrible team, and they were. You look at Miami, who just fired their coach. But Baltimore, because you lay the egg at Buffalo and then return home the week after and just are pathetic against the Ravens. Could not do anything. And a 21-0 game that felt like 42-0 after not being able to score against Buffalo. You know, if Buffalo is the game where you're just going to point to and say, oh, they lost to the Bills, that was the loss that got away, that's the team we should have won against, then you have to turn around and play well against Baltimore at home. And what was and felt like a wild card potential type game, turns out both teams are right there in at the end of the year. And I realize that if you split both of those losses and you get one and one loss, they're still in the situation they were week 17 if everything else is equal. But that weighs just as heavily on my mind as the Buffalo loss or the way that sequence went back to back.
And you think of the ups and downs of this team. I mean, you had the big wins versus Dallas and New England, two playoff teams, two division winners. I mean, that was two big wins that were really not, I mean, there was no doubt that they won both of those games.
That's right.
And handled it.
Well, so they first year head coach, first time offensive play caller. They fought through a number of injuries, which have been well documented. Had the odd scheduling that we've detailed. They had the loss at Buffalo and Miami. They're the only losses to sub 500 teams. And again, even if you could split those games, you're still in a situation that they were last night. Second highest strength of schedule at 0.507 among the AFC playoff contenders. They beat three playoff teams currently. They played nine. Nine of the 16 games were against playoff opponents. Houston, Indy, New England, Baltimore, L.A., Dallas, and Philly. They went 4-5 in those games.
Bears, Colts, two first-year head coaches, play callers. You know, really, that you have to throw that out.
Well,
and the reason I say throw it out, because you went to the playoffs last year with an established coaching staff, and you decided to want to make a change for the better. And you stayed with the same record, but you didn't make the playoffs. The goal is to make the playoffs. Whether you're 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, 16-0, doesn't matter. Playoffs are the key. Get in the playoffs, and you have a chance. I mean, I remember the Green Bay Packers a few years ago, well, probably more than a few years ago, they were one of the worst playoff teams to enter in. They got in on the last week of the season, ended up winning the Super Bowl because they got in the game, and then they ended up winning it.
All fair. Also fair to say that other teams have those same up and down and bumpy paths. Just looking in your own division, Indianapolis started 1-5. Houston starts 0-3. They turned it around. They made adjustments. They figured things out.
Needed to run away.
We go next to Mark in Nashville. Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Great.
Hey, I just was curious. Mariota didn't suit up last night, so who would have been number three if Gabbert would have gone down? Thanks.
It was Austin Davis as the backup, and then Paul, do you have information on the emergency?
I don't.
Oh, come on, we know. Derrick Henry.
Well, Derrick Henry would have wildcatted a lot. Do I recall hearing Darius Jennings?
Jennings, yeah. Well, there are a lot of former high school quarterbacks on the roster. He's the one that plays on offense. So I think that's why he gets the nod, is he's available offensively. Yeah, maybe it is Darius Jennings.
I'm not sure who the emergency quarterback is.
I think it's safe to assume you go Wildcat.
A lot of Wildcat.
You snap it directly to 22, and maybe you do that as the backup option, not the third option.
Yeah, you're in trouble if you're down to the third option.
Hey, just curious, why do you think they came out and ran one play in Wildcat on the first snap after the big return?
Looked like they wanted to make a little bit of an adjustment, just see a little bit of a change with what they're seeing from the defense. Early on, the defense was stacking the box with eight. That's not going to be any different when you see the Wildcat. But a lot of those jet reverses that you've seen in the past during the season, I expected more of that, to get them moving laterally instead of just stacking the box and playing against Derrick Henry, which they pretty much did the first half.
It is pack-up day, move-out day for the Titans in that locker room. Blake, what is today like in the facility? I mean, I'm assuming you've been around for moments like this. Maybe you haven't because it's also bowl season and scouts are out and about. But just internally, the finality of no one's planning for the exit interviews after week 17 when you have a chance at the postseason, and then all of a sudden, well, it's time to pack up and move on to next year.
It's a very somber day. You want your season to continue on. You never want it to end. I've been on a team that went 3-13 and been on a team that went 13-3.
You could have had the X interviews at week 8.
Yeah, the 3-13, you know it's coming to an end. You plan a little bit more ahead. But, as someone in personnel, you're busy right now with bowl games and that type of thing, and planning for the Senior Bowl and the East-West and all the different All-Star games and the Combine a month and a half away. So there's a lot of things that's going in from the personnel department. But being in the office like I was over my time there as well, it's a tough day. You see the players in the hallways. Players that are unrestricted free agents aren't quite sure if this is going to be the last time that they're in the building. Players that are currently injured have to get the exit physicals. They have to get cleared before they can leave the building. Otherwise, they have to rehab. Coaches that have contracts that come up in February, the beginning of February, it starts to get a little bit more uncertain with them as well. So there's a lot of uncertainty at this time, especially when, you go in the locker room and you see a bunch of garbage bags in front of lockers and players are told just to get their cleats and all their gear and basically get out of the building.
Coming up, Paul, if you don't mind, pull up a list of the free agent class, and let's go through that with Blake in like 15 minutes or so. Let's go rapid fire phones now. And we go to Sean in Nashville, who's been waiting patiently. Hey, Sean.
Hey, bud. How's it going?
Great.
Just wanted to make a couple points real quick before I get to my question. One, I'm a huge Mariota fan. Have been since day one. Love his demeanor. Love his passion for the game. My question is, I hate to say this, but how many seasons do we have to go through before we talk about a replacement? I know the draft is thin this year, but, I mean, how many other quarterbacks have missed games out of four straight seasons? And, I mean, I'd love to see him improve and stay healthy and do well, but at the same time, I can't help in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, but I could say coulda, woulda, shoulda next year. He could be healthy, he could this, but 4 years is a lot of time to not have played one complete season. And I'll hang up and listen to you guys talk.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. I mean, again, you know, it's frustrating. Paul and I get it. We've been mentioning it throughout the show. You know, the fact is there are key moments where he has been unavailable. It's also a fact that he is no Jake Locker when it comes to availability of starting games. Paul pulled up the stats and the number of starts that Locker missed compared to what Mariota has missed. That's not factoring in games where he gets hurt and goes to the sideline for a few series or a half, but just starts. But last night was a big moment, and he was not able to play. Long-term health certainly weighed in on that. I heard the argument made Saturday night. Well, you know, players put their bodies at risk. They know the risk when they take the field. Well, of course they do. But when there's added risk on top of that, you have to weigh the future of your career and just your overall livelihood of feeling good as you get older when you're in your mid-20s currently. I don't blame the guy for factoring all of those things in.
Also, I mean, some of the very best up-and-coming quarterbacks have missed some significant time. Deshaun Watson missed most of last year. Carson Wentz missed most of last year and has not been himself this year and
missed
is on the
final month. And then
again, Jimmy Garoppolo has missed this year.
Uh-huh.
I love all those
Andrew
guys.
Andrew Luck
missed last year. So you're frustrated because Mariota has these ticky-tacky injuries where he's in and out of the lineup. And he's missing a couple games a year. But you just kind of said, how long do we have to deal with this guy who can't finish a season? Well, he hasn't had a tour. You know, look, I don't want to defend him in this way. I've got the same frustrations that you do. But he hasn't torn an ACL. He hasn't been in Sweden getting miracle treatment on his shoulder. To that argument, I say Deshaun Watson, Jimmy Garoppolo, Carson Wentz. What do you say back when I say those names?
I think the frustration, Blake, from the fan perspective is new offensive coordinator that was going to maximize the talent that Mariota possessed. On top of that, this season in particular, year four, the injury in week one carried over for what felt like a month and a half with the glove on his hand. He hits a stretch where he's playing well. A stinger occurs where he has to exit the game and then get back the momentum that he had gained to the point. And then you suffer another stinger against Washington and you miss week 17. So you're still left wondering, okay, is this the right system for him? And is he the quarterback for this system? Like you're still left saying what if, and yeah, I really don't know. You're somewhere in the middle, just like you were at this time last year and the year before that.
You know, in the first eight games of the season, they were a Deion Lewis led running attack. And they proved at the end of the season, at least the last month, that with Derrick Henry in there, they have another threat, another playmaker, someone that can take the pressure off the offensive line, mm-hmm. which it did, and yep. take the pressure off the quarterback. You even saw in this game last night with Blaine Gabbert as the quarterback, when they went play action to Derrick Henry, both of those inside linebackers, they bit up every single time. They just didn't run it enough. Anthony Firkser, Luke Stocker, we're not talking about top-level tight ends, were wide open in the middle of the field because the safety was playing. There was a deep man-free safety, and then they were playing. The linebackers were playing up so much. The middle of the field was wide open. They just didn't tack it enough. But, you know, that's another story. But, you know, you look at some of the injuries and some of the things, even with some of the rookie quarterbacks this year. Sam Darnold missed a number of games.
Sure.
Josh Allen missed a number of games with Buffalo. I mean, this is a...
You're going to play your backup quarterback in this league.
You're
going to
play your backup quarterback, and that's why you need a good, solid, really a game manager. That's what you're going to get. You don't want a game loser. You want a game manager, and you want someone that can be precise with the ball, consistent, and that's what they hoped they were getting in the Luke Falk. They just didn't give it enough time.
Paul, I think, too, we want to be able to separate the injuries and the dings from the production. And I think there's a blurry line that says, is a healthy Mariota better production-wise or is he not because of the injuries? So despite the percentages of games he's missed, he's still playing through injuries when he's starting, right? He's a tough guy. He's playing through the dings. He's getting hit. He's getting sacked. He's taking licks. And you're still wondering, okay, if he has protection up front, how much does the production change overall? Where's the quality of quarterback play, and how much does it rise?
And he's never going to be totally healthy. None of them are ever totally healthy. So at the baseline, like regular, not healthy quarterback level, how good is he? I don't know that we have gotten a sufficient answer on that. It's too up and down. The inconsistency maybe is what drives us all crazy more than anything.
Right. And just like,
so we're frustrated. We can't get the damn answer on how good is he,
right?
Because the injuries keep throwing us off of seeing him play.
And this also needs mentioning. The same fans that are complaining about Mariota not playing are the same fans who purchase Mari Gota T-shirts whenever the guy has a fourth quarter game-winning drive. Let's go to Ron in Nashville. Hey, Ron.
Hey, fellas. How you all today? First-time caller, long time listener. Listen, I don't want to sound repetitive by echoing the sentiments of a former caller, but listen, guys, let's just be real. I like Mariota. I like his skill set. I like his temperament. I like his tenacity. I like everything about him. But let's be honest. The guy has a pre-existing condition. He needs Obamacare, and his pre-existing condition is that he is injury prone. He's injury prone. He's always been injury prone. Now, my question to Paul is this. How much value do you put on someone who has a pre-existing condition, not only monetarily, but logistically, when you're trying to move a team in a direction, not just having a winning season? That's mediocre to have a winning season, but to logistically move a team toward winning a championship.
Well, Ron, I got to know who the replacement is. The thing is, you're measuring him against this imaginary, never injured, fantastic player. I need you to put a face and a name on that guy. I need to know who he is and where you're getting him. Well, this is the thing. We measure him against a guy who doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, they exist. I mean, they exist.
Well, who is he?
But we don't have one.
Well, yeah, you have to be able to get one. So the one you...
You're not answering my question, Paul. My question to you is, how much value do you put on that particular player?
He's got more value than Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah, for sure. But Ron, I mean, you also measure him against the top quarterbacks in this league because that's what he was drafted to be.
Well, he's not one of them.
And if you're measuring him against Watson and Luck and Mahomes and others, he's not at that level.
If you're measuring him against Jameis Winston, who is drafted one spot against him, I'll take him.
Yeah, Mariota eats the W.
But here's the facts. I mean, the facts are the Titans a better offense with Mariota's quarterback? Yes. Is he the type of player that a good portion of the league would want? I can't say that's a fact. But the facts are the team is better with him, okay? And he's the best quarterback on the roster. That's the facts. That's what personnel people are dealing with right now.
You say a good portion of the league would want as their backup?
As their starter. Right now, there are a number of teams that would take Mariota right now over what they currently have on the roster. Mariota's the best player, best quarterback on the Titans roster, and they're a better team when he's playing. Those are facts.
Yeah, that's
no question about that. And in my judgment, as a personnel guy, he's better than any quarterback coming out in the draft this year. That's declared for this year.
Blake, help me with this. Is it easier to go find a backup that's capable of starting a few games and winning you a few games, or finding pieces to the puzzle up front of the offensive line to keep your quarterback healthier? And here's the other key in all of this when it comes to the offensive line. Can you have success with Mariota without using his best traits, which put him at a higher risk for being injured? When you put him on the move and you're moving him outside of the pocket is his protection. And when he's moving outside of the pocket and throwing on the run, that's where he's at his best. That's where he can take some more shots.
I think Marcus is a very accurate quarterback, whether he's on the move or in the pocket. You know, I think he needs more playmakers. I've said that all year. Yeah. He doesn't have enough playmakers, and the really good teams have them, and he doesn't have them. And the ones they've paid or drafted to be playmakers have not produced. Those are facts as well. So, you know, you're looking at this year when they went to Derrick Henry later in the season. Derrick took pressure off Marcus, and Derrick took pressure off the offensive line. The offensive line somehow got remarkably better when the running game got better. That's not just by happen chance. That's because they were able to give an extra threat to a defense and took the pressure off. But to answer your question about Marcus, can he be just a pocket passer? Yes. He's going to have to get more comfortable sitting in the pocket. When you're a good athlete like a Mariota or a Deshaun Watson, who has the same issues that Marcus has, holding the ball a little bit too long, taking sacks where they're not needed, they always feel, as athletes that have good feet and good movement skills, that they can avoid a rush or escape. And they don't always do that. Not in this league. They're still young quarterbacks. In college, they were able to escape from some of the rush. But when you're going up against a rush like the Titans have with the Texans or the Jaguars or some of these really good front fours, the Ravens, they're going to put pressure on you and they're going to get you down. You have to be able to throw the ball away. The great quarterbacks that don't take sacks, Andrew Luck being one of them, yes, did improve their offensive line some. Yes, but some of those same players that were horrible last year and 2 years ago were on that offensive line. Costanzo at left tackle, Ryan Kelly at center. They just didn't all of a sudden become great because Quentin Nelson was drafted and Braden Smith was drafted. Braden Smith's a guard, and he's playing right tackle right now.
You're right.
They have an excellent quarterback that gets rid of the ball and lives to play another down. Peyton Manning made a career out of throwing the ball away on second and 10 and making a completion on third and 10 to continue drives. Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, none of them get sacked. Deshaun Watson's one of the rare few that gets sacked a high number of times a game and wins ball games. And it's because he has playmaking ability and a playmaker in DeAndre Hopkins. He's got one of the best receivers in the NFL that makes plays for him.
And that's probably a ticking time bomb, too, at some point. All those hits he's taken.
And you look at him last year, lost for the season. So that's going to happen. I mean, Deshaun has had those injuries, whether it's college, high school, and the pros. And he's going to have to learn to survive because he can be a pocket passer as well.
Day 180 served up by Wendy's. Coming up with Blake Bedingfield in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll discuss the college football playoff and the duds of games that occurred on Saturday.
Those games were so bad that they were contagious, and the NFL early window caught the bad footballitis.
But at least
there weren't any good games until the 3 o'clock window.
But at least in the early window, the NFL knew the games were going to be bad. That's why they were at noon. And all the good games were at 3:25 for Sunday Night Football. By the way, I have the ratings for Sunday Night Football, Paul. Nashville pulled a 29.9 last night.
Pretty damn good.
And the Colts-Titans on NBC Sunday Night Football posted a 10-7 overnight, which does not include digital, easily ranking as primetime's number one show on Sunday. So this lived up to what the league wanted in game 256.
They have the Titans to thank for scrapping and staying in it.
So Nashville pulled a 29-9. Indy, 38-6 was their rating.
Wow.
38.6. Just for those interested, the third market for viewers, New Orleans at 17.5.
Who
there you
tweeted
go.
That?
This was an email to me.
I would have thought Pittsburgh, because I did not realize this, but if that game tied the way things shook out, if that game tied, Pittsburgh would have gotten in, and neither the Colts nor the Titans would have gotten in.
Let's go back to the phones before we go through some free agents. Let's talk to Andrew in Hendersonville to discuss wide receivers. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, man.
I'm from Chicago and lived here in Nashville for 30 years now, and I'm a Titans fan as well. But how can we go from almost last in the division like Chicago last year to first in the division like they did this year as far as going out and getting wide receivers? They probably were the worst wide receiver core in the league last year, Bears were, and they got, you know, where's the Dontrell Inmans, the Tyler Gabriels, the Allen Robertsons? Why can't we bring in guys like that? And also they have a defense like us that's pretty good, and then they got a top pass rusher, and look at their success. And also
Dontrell Inman isn't on the Colts, isn't on the Bears.
Right, no, right. But the Colts did get him, though. The Colts did get him.
He, in the middle of the season,
with the
too.
Charge. Okay, well, but how do we get those guys? Are they out there this year in the pass rusher, as we talked about? And also, I think the game's evolving. You know, it started with the read option to now having a speedy wide receiver that can run and catch at the same time and also frees the linebackers in motion as he comes across before the ball's hiked to freeze the linebackers. I feel like everybody's teeing off on us because we don't have that, and they're just coming after us. Okay, I'll hang up.
All right, Andrew. Thank you, man.
Well, let's say this. The Bears were 5-11 to go from worst to first. I mean, that's a big jump. The Titans were 9-7, and they're in third place now. I mean, to go from 9-7 to first, I'm not saying they're going to do it, but it's a 2 or 3 game game. You're not going from 5-11. They don't have to do what the Bears did from last year to this year.
Blake, is it easier in the league to go from 5-11 to 9-7, or to go from 9-7 to 11 wins on a season? Like to get the 2 extra, or to make the big jump from bottom of the barrel, top 10 pick, to a playoff contender?
I think the 2 extra is probably the most difficult. The 5-11 to 9-7. A lot of the reasons you're 5-11 is either a quarterback issue, or you have a lot of injuries that put you in that situation. If your team's just bad, you're going to have constant turnover anyway, whether it's head coaches, general manager, and you're going to be churning personnel no matter what. But, you know, they've brought in the new coach, and he's talking about the Chicago Bears. They brought in the new coach. They brought in 3 new wide receivers this year: Tyler Gabriel in free agency, Allen Robinson in free agency, and Anthony Miller in the draft. So they brought in 3 new receivers to add to Tarik Cohen, who they already had, Jordan Howard at running back. So, and then the rookie quarterback is now in his 2nd year in developing.
They trade for Khalil Mack.
And then they drafted Leonard Floyd 3 right. years ago as a pass rusher, added Roquan Smith in the first round as an inside backer, and then was able to go out and get a premier pass rusher in Khalil Mack to add to that group that they were developing and drafting. But the big thing is it is rare to see a pass rusher, a left tackle, a quarterback on the free agent market of that caliber. And when they do, the Bears jumped on it and became a totally different team. And the Leonard Floyd became a better player because of it. Roquan Smith became a really good player, even though he's a first-round pick. And Khalil Mack's a stud. So, you know, you've got some of these
all tides rose.
It happens at one time, and it's just rare to have those kind of positions out there in free agency.
Yeah.
Titans, by the way, drafting 19th, number 19 in the Nashville draft.
First glance, is this a deep draft or no?
It's a deep draft, a defensive line. If you're looking for a defensive tackle, this is your draft. You're going to have a number of, when I say a number, I'm talking 12 to 15 if all the juniors come out in the first 2 rounds, defensive linemen. And I'm talking about ends and defensive tackles. So you're going to have a very strong defensive line draft. Not strong if you're looking at quarterback, not strong if you're looking at receiver. It's just not that draft this year.
Let's run through the top free agents. I'm just going in the order here of what their salary was this year. Tell me if this is a guy that intrigues you or you would want the Titans to look at. Ezekiel Ansah.
No, wrong side of 30.
DeMarcus Lawrence.
Like DeMarcus, I could see him getting re-signed. He's still a young player with some upside to him. You're talking about that 27, 28-year-old range right in the prime of his career, so yes.
Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor is the kind of backup you're looking for, and he could be, and you know, I thought another team would give him an opportunity to be a starter, and I'm talking about the back-end teams that were struggling, like the Jaguars. But Tyrod Taylor would be a very good backup here.
And Ndamukong Suh really didn't do much next to Aaron Donald.
No, and you know, his time is starting to come toward the end. He still requires a lot of money and a lot of you've got to handle him a certain way. But with Casey, he can be a really good player. Just like he didn't show up as much with Donald like you would expect.
Clay Matthews,
wrong side of 30s, mid-30s now. This is a guy that has had his time and he's past his prime.
LaMarcus Joyner,
I like. They really don't have the need for him with the three corners that they have and the safeties that they have. If Vaccaro happens to leave in free agency, is he a guy that would be a good player that fits that mold of aggressive type player that Vaccaro and Byard are? Yes.
I'll skip past Larry Fitzgerald. Randall Cobb,
no, past his prime.
Earl Thomas, no, don't need the safety. Nope. Josh McCown,
no.
40. You talk about wrong side of 30. Dante Moncrief.
Dante Moncrief doesn't really fit. I mean, he's what the team has. You can have that in Tajay Sharp.
Kareem Jackson, old,
yeah.
Ryan Khalil, old.
Right.
Cameron Wake, old.
Yeah, he's old. I mean, you know, if you got him on a really cheap deal that he wanted, but he's going to go to a team that has a chance to win a Super Bowl right now.
Sheldon Richardson
has some issues that you got to deal with, and this team hasn't really shown that they want to sign those type of players, but he has that interior pass rush ability that you're looking for to match with a Casey. I would say yes, and you got to see how he's acted the last few years.
Mike Iupati.
Mike Iupati is a very good player. I mean, he's gonna be expensive, even though he's getting up there in age. He's still a good guard. But the problem with him is he really fit the zone scheme? I mean, he's more of a power guy than he is zone. And you know, is he really worth that the price that you're going to pay for another guard?
Andy Levitre, been there, done that.
Nope.
Arakpo, been there, done that. Williamson, been there, done that. Brent Grimes, ancient.
Nope.
Another safety, another corner.
How about Rashard Matthews?
That would be a no.
Tavon Austin didn't do a thing.
No. And he was with the Rams. That just didn't know.
KJ Wright.
KJ Wright is not really a fit. He's more of a Sam linebacker in a 4-3. He's more of a rundown player than pass rusher. Not really going to help the team.
Thomas Davis, too old?
Yep, too old. Been injured a number of times. Suspended this year as well.
Brandon Graham,
I don't like him as a starter. I like him as a third pass rusher. He's tough against the run, but also has some pass rush.
Paul, you're headed to a Titans open locker room where there will be some potential free agents in that locker room for the final time.
Maybe some goodbyes.
The one player you want to hear from is the player who didn't play last night, Marcus Mariota.
And the one player I want to say goodbye to, almost certain to be back.
He's talking about Darren Bates.
He's going to be in there because he controls the locker room.
That's right.
He's got to be in there.
Press conference coming up on 3HL. They'll have the Mike Vrabel presser at 2 o'clock.